to go ahead and call the meeting of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs to order. Let the official CNR clock on the wall show 1:35 PM, April 26, 2006. We have two items on the agenda. We're going to hear first House Bill 392, Solid Waste Management Authorities, and then we're going to hear House Bill 334, Property Tax Exemption and for Deteriorated Properties, and we're probably just going to hear that and let and hold it for now. With that, I'd like to have the public hearing after the opening remarks from Representative Wilson on House Bill 392. If she could come forward and enlighten us with her background and knowledge of the subject matter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is my staff person that has been really working on this. This is Becky Rooney, and I'll let her go ahead and explain the bill. And she probably knows more about it than I do, but I'll be glad to answer questions and show issues.
And for the record, you are?
Representative Peggy Wilson, District 2.
It is a fine district, I might add. Thank you. Go ahead and please identify yourself and then just go ahead with your...
My name is Rebecca Rooney, for the record. I'm staff to Representative Peggy Wilson. Mr. Chairman, thank you for hearing HB 392, our Solid Waste Management Authority Bill. I know that this time of year we have a shortage of time, so we have cut our testimony down in an effort to keep this short.
If I could just pause for a minute, let me just for the record say that we do have a quorum. Senator Gary Stevens is here, Senator Tom Wagner, myself, Senator Stedman. And if I could, you can continue.
Okay. I think the most compelling reason to enact HB 392 in Southeast Alaska, well, in all of Alaska, is because the cost of solid waste management in Southeast is very expensive. We pay upwards of $220 per ton to deal with solid waste management when we ship it to the lower 48, to the super landfills in Washington State, while Anchorage pays $40 a ton to deal with the same types of solid waste. HB 392 would provide a vehicle to allow communities to cooperate and form an authority to reduce the cost of dealing with solid waste and potentially keep money spent in the lower 48 here in Southeast Alaska. HB 392 is modeled after the Port Authority. It requires that each municipality's voters approve joining the authority. The authority has an independent legal existence from the municipality and from the state. It may issue bonds, borrow money, and enter into contracts. A board that will, be responsible for creating bylaws and regulations will govern that authority. And each of the participating municipalities will have a seat on that board. It will allow a municipality to withdraw from the authority without dissolving the authority. And the withdrawing municipality will be responsible for any obligation it has to the authority or to the municipalities. Southeast Conference has been spearheading this effort for the last 3 or 4 years, and they have secured funds for 3 studies. The first study went out and did investigations on what kind of a legal entity they would use to form this group of cooperative municipalities to reduce costs, and they are the ones that recommended that we use the authority model. The second study developed the language for the bill, and the third study, which is in final review, is actually looking at different technologies that might be used to dispose of this solid waste. And it is not going to provide a recommendation, but will have information for the authority to use when they finally decide which technology would be best for Southeast Alaska. It also will define the parameters that must be met to make this a financially feasible operation. So with that, I hope you will see the value in this legislation and pass it out of committee. We have several representatives online from the Department of Law, DEC, and Southeast Conference to help us field any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you. Please let the record show that Senator Kukesh has arrived. Do we have any questions for Becky? Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And through the chair, so what you're saying is that individual communities couldn't possibly do this right now without an authority because they couldn't do joint bonds, I suppose?
Yes, exactly. That's what...
Could you give me an example of, just a wild example of communities that might get involved and what they would do, what would be the results of this, what kind of a facility, where?
Where is going to be up to the authority to decide. Communities that have shown interest already in Southeast are Thorn Bay, Wrangell, Petersburg, Sitka, Cake. I think those are the ones that have really spent a lot of time looking at what technologies they would recommend and what the sites might be in their communities if that was the regional facility. And they're going to do propose, it'll be up to the authority to decide what kind of a solution would actually be the best for the solid waste, but they'll propose different things like waste to energy incinerators or super landfill kind of a thing or recycling type plants. It'll be up to the authority to define all of that, but that's some of the ideas that are being kicked around now. Rollo Poole from Southeast Conference could probably give you a better description of that, and I think he is online.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Could you explain how the authority would work in the unorganized areas? I understand when we have borough control, Juneau and Ketchikan and Sitka, but there's areas like Petersburg and Wrangell that are just municipalities. But there's areas, Cake has been mentioned numerous times as a potential site for a regional plant just because of its central location and good harbor facilities. And Tolstoy Bay, right south of Thorn Bay on East Prince of Wales, neither one of those are in an organized borough, and I was wondering how that would work.
Chairman, I think I would defer that to Rollo Poole because he has been the most involved in that, and he can probably give you a better answer than I.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, this is Rollo. Would you like me to answer?
No, not right now, Mr. Poole. We'll get to you here in a minute. We're just waiting. We're still cooking Becky in the hot seat here for a couple more questions, and then we'll be right to you. Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Because of what's already been said, is this something that an organized borough could do? And why don't we go through boroughs to do this? Boroughs can have powers that they choose to have, and they could bond and... Is there something about Southeastern that I'm missing? That are there some of the areas you're talking about going into a sort of an organization would are not in the same borough, or is that?
Yes, that's what we were hoping, was that many boroughs would go together so that we could have one landfill for all of Southeast, and that's not a single borough now. Mm-hmm. And because there's, you really can get economies of scale because most of the cities and even the potential boroughs are not very big.
Thank you.
If I could make a comment, that is correct. There's been a lot of talk of this over the last 20 to 15 years, and especially with the demobilization and departure of the incinerators in Southeast. It virtually went back to either burying the garbage or having all the impacts or doing off-site disposal or shipping. And the communities have entered into long-term contracts, which is another subject, trying to how that's going to be dealt with, to ship by barge and then by rail to Eastern Washington at prices that were surprisingly high from what the local residents were anticipating. Any other questions? Maybe we can go to Mr. Rollo Poole, who represents Southeast Conference. Mr. Poole, if you can identify yourself, who you represent, and maybe give us a little brief history and talk about how this would work if it was passed.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Rollo Poole, and I'm here today representing Southeast Conference. We worked quite a bit on this on the grants for this and the legislation. Let me back up just a second. And maybe what is not known to some of the committee members is about one-third of the trash in Southeast Alaska is being shipped to the lower 48. The cost for building new landfills in communities where their landfill space was exceeded or at capacity was prohibitive. And it isn't that much more to build a landfill for several communities as it is for one. However, no community has come forward as the single entity that would build and operate a landfill. That's why this legislation is so important. It allows communities that are incorporated or boroughs to cooperate as a single unit on solid waste. This would not impact the local pickup service. It's basically from the dock to the regional facility or facilities, and it allows them then to work together on bonds and grants and so forth as a single entity. So this is the reason for it. There is no company in Southeast Alaska that has come forward in the last 50 years to sponsor a regional landfill, and that's why the communities have gotten together to do this, and hopefully it will be located in one of the communities that has shown an interest. Another number that we've been using is about 23,000 tons is shipped presently from Southeast Alaska. We've also been talking with the Juneau borough officials, too, and there's been some concern over the local landfill that's privately owned in Juneau and when its capacity will end and what their plans are. Juneau's trash is about 30,000 tons together. So whether you have 23,000 or 53,000 tons, it gets to be a mass of such a size that it would make something economical with the help of some grants to get it started. And so we've got communities now that are looking at through their elected officials, have passed resolutions or have given us an indication of support for a host site for a regional facility. So we're really pleased. It's not very often when you go to put in a landfill that somebody raises their hand and says, I'd like it in my backyard. It's not so much that this would become a burden to a community or to a borough, but that they then would build the facility through the authority, and then it would be probably operated or contracted with a firm that knows how to run landfills. So that is the purpose of this, and the purpose is because you just cannot get one community to come forward to do this, and the cost is fairly prohibitive.
Thank you, Mr. Poole.
One more thing, Mr. Chair. As obviously, the Southeast Conference is very supportive of this bill and wishes passage from the committee.
How many years, Rollo, has Southeast Conference been working on this regional waste concept?
To tell you the truth, Mr. Chair, it has been over a dozen years. Every city in Southeast Alaska has done one or two or three or four landfill or recycling reports over the last, probably since 1990. I know Sitka's done several. Juneau's done several. They've done site location studies. Each of the studies near the conclusion says, oh, by the way, the community should work together to on solid waste as a unit. However, with landfills ending at different times with their are reaching their capacity at different times, communities have decided instead of taking the more costly and local route, they have decided to ship. Ketchikan was the first to begin shipping. I believe it was about 95, and Sitka was next, and Wrangell Petersburg, and lastly, Craig and Klawak have begun shipping their waste south. The average cost per ton for these communities that ship is about $102, where the maximum is about $220 a ton. The lowest is about in Ketchikan, which is closest to this in Washington, is about $70 or $75 a ton. So it's been a long time, and this is the first time that we have had the legislation that we need to create the Solid Waste Authority, and so that's why we're glad to be to this point.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Poole. Any questions? Senator Stevens.
Mr. Poole, it sounds like a very good plan to me, and I understand you've been working on it a long time. I'm just wondering from the standpoint of the consumer, You know, I understand a consumer working with their municipality, their city, or borough, and they have recourses if suddenly the costs are too high, and they can replace the members of the council and the assembly, or have recalls and all that sort of thing. What's the consumer's options with an organization like you're talking about? What can the consumers do if suddenly they find they're paying more than they want to pay for this operation?
In Southeast Alaska, in every community, there's no more than one source of pickup and landfill. And in some cases, it's done both by the city, the pickup and the landfill. In some cases, like in Juneau, it's done privately. So the consumer has a choice not to create garbage. However, that's pretty impractical. We can also reduce, we can cut back, we can recycle more. But the consumer is paying, for example, the landfill, if you were to take a ton of trash to the Anchorage landfill, I believe they would charge us about $30 to $35 a ton. So when you see towns like Craig and Kluwak that are paying $200 a ton, it's a pretty high difference. And we don't know if they'll ever be able to get down to $35 a ton or $50 a ton, but even down to $70 or $80 a ton would be a big savings to the communities. The other component of this is that a regional landfill will have jobs with it. Whether you have a recycling component at the beginning of it, it's going to create the jobs that we're now exporting to Seattle and Washington will be here in the region. And a landfill, depending on the different components, could have from 6 to up to 15 or 20 employees. And for some of the communities in this region that have suffered because of the downturn in the timber economy over the last dozen years, those can be a pretty big, important jobs. And you can probably count on garbage being produced for the long term.
Okay, thank you.
Well, Mr. Polly, that really doesn't answer my question. I guess my question is, as a consumer, if I live in Craig and I suddenly really think for some reason there's a bunch of scoundrels running this operation, what can I do about it?
These are representatives of the community that will form the authority. Each community, it's not, these aren't businesses, these are communities. What these authorities will adhere to are very public records, public meetings, and lots of access. It, in some communities, for example, Sitka right now, if I don't want to pay my garbage bill, they're still going to charge me for it. If I don't want to use the garbage service, they still require me to pay the garbage bill. We don't have in other communities I think what you would have is just like when the voters don't like a candidate, they vote them out of office. So this one is going to be, again, the communities are going to vote for it and they can vote out of it. An individual can probably not do a lot, but a group of individuals probably can. And there's always going to be one or two people that don't want to pay anything for their garbage being hauled out. Is that getting closer to the answer?
Well, I think so. Maybe I haven't gone that far into the end of the bill, but what do we call the people who actually are in charge of the organization? Are they like, what would their titles be?
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Stevens, Senator Stevens, through the chair, I can envision if we had a Sitka and we had Ketchikan, Prince of Wales, those communities would select their person to be on this. And these would be, I'm assuming, would be pretty much these are not full-time paid positions. These are volunteers. It might be the city manager in Craig. That's one of the authorities. It might be the mayor of Petersburg, who's a member of the authority. These are the kinds of people that would be elected. And the authority itself will have to decide how it will distribute votes. Obviously, a town the size of Juneau, if it becomes a player, and which is 30,000 people, probably would want more to say in this than Petersburg, which has about 3,200 people. So the authority itself, which is made up of basically public officials, whether they're employees or elected, will constitute the basis for the decision making body for this organization.
Through the chair, thank you, Mr. Poole. I appreciate that response. Just so I understand this a little bit more, now, say a community was a part of this Port Authority, many communities, is it my responsibility as a community of Craig to ship our waste to your facility by barge or whatever, or will the Port Authority actually own these barges and pick up around the various areas?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, we don't anticipate that the authority would get into the tug and barge business. There is existing service for that right now. It's very expensive to purchase a tug and to operate it and the barges when there's excess capacity right now for these for this service. I see this more as an organization deciding what will be on a regional site. Will they have a large-scale recycling? Will they have waste to energy? Will they, well, you know, how big will the landfill site be and so forth? I don't see them mucking up too much into that, the transportation of this. Right now, all the trash that is being sent to Seattle is being sent on a private barge company. And it's not being used by, you know, none of the cities that are shipping are have their own tug and barges.
Well, thank you, Mr. Poole. I appreciate your answers.
If I could add just a little bit to it, the communities have to enter into a long-term shipping contract. One of the concerns that the communities have is how do you get out of that contract? They want 10 or 15 years. They're fairly long contracts. So there's some logistics here that the Port Authority, or the Waste Authority, I should say, would have to deal with when they're trying to come together and bring different communities online, because each community has a little different date set on their contracts. Senator Wagner. I almost called you Tom.
Yeah, one question. I understand all the intricacies and the problems of solid waste. We've gone through this Kenai Peninsula Borough sometime back. The greatest day in the city of Kenai, as a matter of fact, is when the borough came to us and said they would love to take over our dump. And that was one of the few unanimous decisions we had at council at that time. But have you looked also, while you're looking at a central place to have a landfill, if not a central place to have a landfill, a central place where you could bring in containers and transship those containers out as a backhaul?
Senator Wagner, through the chair, that's currently how it's being shipped south now. Most of the towns that are shipping, Sitka, Wrangell, Petersburg, Ketchikan, Prince of Wales Island, basically have transfer facilities, and that's where the garbage trucks go. They dump their load on a floor, it's pushed into the containers, and then it's put onto, it's pulled by a truck to the barge and put on a barge.
If that isn't what I asked, I said a centralized facility where it all goes and then is ready. It seems like just the economy of scale and the size of the barge and the operation would improve your $77 a ton is a lot of money to be paying to dispose of a ton of garbage.
I guess, Senator Wagner, I'm failing to grasp your question. If you could just state it one more time, I'm trying to be responsive.
Well, I'm just saying the size of the barge, number one, is part of the price of transferring that garbage to Seattle or wherever you go with it. And wouldn't there be an opportunity, the more garbage you put together before you put it on a barge, the less expensive it is to transport a ton of garbage?
Yes, sir, it is. The difference is that going from if there's a site on Prince of Wales Island, there's going to be less of a cost to get from Craig by road than it is from Juneau. So there will be a disparity, and there is there. But yeah, that right now most of these shipments are going back on basically backhauls when the barges come up fairly full and they go back fairly empty to Seattle. The more garbage there is, the better the economy of scale is for the landfill and also for shipping costs.
The other question I'd have, this may be another reason we should put some money into it. Instead of building roads to nowhere like we're doing now, maybe we should take a look at the real needs of southeastern Alaska, look at the Bradfield Road, and get off of all these other projects that don't do a heck of a lot for the economy in southeastern. you know, there's a vast area there that probably could be used for landfills at a much less price than what you're going out in Washington. Have anybody looked at that?
Senator Wagner, through the chair, if you're saying that there's a site near the Bradfield might be better suited than an existing site, you have to consider the cost of construction. If, for example, in Wrangell, we're a site, it has the docks, it has the roads, it has the utilities there. Again, adding that cost onto a landfill, plus the Bradfield is right now out of the way. It's not where the barges normally travel. And to go there would be probably a higher cost. I don't know if it would be higher than it is now, but it would be certainly higher than one of the other communities or areas that is along the main shipping route of Southeast Alaska.
I'm pretty familiar with landfills. They fill up pretty fast. And I don't think Southeastern's got too many sites that are going to have too many landfills. And so what I'm saying is, if you're going to do it right and take a look at that in the long run, because little landfills are not economical, and big landfills, nobody wants it in their own backyard.
Senator Wagner, through the chair, yes, you're right. The bigger the landfill, the place, for example, that Thorne Bay is looking at is an area that's several miles out of town. We have told the communities that they need to have a minimum of about 50 acres. It has to be well buffered. It has to have a room to expand, and not be next door to schools and that kind of thing. I think Thorne Bay has already talked with some people from the Department of Natural Resources to look at the possibility of getting somehow state land that is down there for a facility. And it's not an area that is going to be prone to any urban growth over many, many years, and would have lots of room to grow. We would design a landfill that would last a minimum of about 50 years, and if we didn't have a site for that, then it probably wouldn't be a good site to start.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Also,
maybe you could slide up so can be picked up by the microphone.
Also, I don't know if everyone is aware, but all of the communities in Southeast Alaska basically are inside the Tongass National Forest. And because of that, we have to be very selective. I mean, they aren't going to let us put it in the National Forest. And so our land is very, very limited in Southeast, especially since after the land was given to the university last year. So because of that,
I was going to ask if how that land that they're going to put the landfill on escaped the purge of the university, but I didn't want to go there.
So anyway, there's not a huge area that we can do this with, and so certain communities have stepped up and said, I think we have enough area here. Some communities don't have any extra area to be able to do that, and also to answer. Senator Stevens, in the area as far as protection for the consumer, inside the bill there is a clause, and Becky can probably show you where it's at. But
page 12,
and that says that if there is an area where some one entity is going to be doing all of this, and there's a concern about that, if somebody else wants to come in and do it, then if there's two entities at all, then it would automatically, depending on the population and a few other things, the amount of revenue generated, that then they would be under the authority of the RCA, and that would automatically start protecting consumers.
Where do I find that?
Page 12.
Page 12 line.
Section 3, line 19. 18 through 22.
I would think that, or the impression I get going forward with this regional facility, that the communities are all together working through Southeast Conference to try to not have waste disposal sites in Cake and down one by Thorn Bay and one up by Juneau, and but to try to consolidate it through in one location, whoever actually comes up to the plate and could put something together. And I don't know, Senator Kukesh know better than I do what Cake's current opinion is, but I know it's been mentioned numerous times just because of its central location. Now, if they're interested today, I'd have to talk to them. But
just a comment, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, Cake has access to not only its own lands, but Sea Alaska lands. And Sea Alaska owns all the subsurface there, and we've had a discussion with them already about it. So it's most of the Southeast is surrounded by the Tongass National Forest. Cake is not. Not for all. If you ever go by Cake, you'll see the clear cuts around that village for miles, and so that they have all that land available to them.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Poole? And we'll go to Craig. Okay, we'll go to Craig and talk to John Bowling, and if he could identify himself and
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Mr. Bowling.
My name is John Bowling. I'm the city administrator for the city of Craig. I also sit on the Southeast Conference Board of Directors, and I participate in the Southeast Conference Environment Committee, which has been working on this project for a number of years. And Mr. Chairman, I'm here to testify in favor of the bill. In Craig, we pay, and I've heard Craig mentioned several times during this hearing as in a hypothetical, so I can give you the factual day-to-day information. We're paying $200 a ton to dispose of our solid waste. We have a contractual agreement with the city of Quahog. They actually operate the landfill. We contract with them. They pay a similar amount for their garbage, and it is transported to regional landfill in the lower 48. This, because we pay the most of anybody in Southeast to get rid of our municipal solid waste, we have a special interest in this project. I see nothing but potential benefits by allowing the communities to band together to deal with an issue that we all have in common. We all of our communities generate municipal solid waste. This provides us an opportunity, a different opportunity, to deal with it with a greater economy of scale and therefore hopefully more economically. I might add, Mr. Chairman, that Craig is already a member of an authority. We are a member of the Inter-Island Ferry Authority, which was organized under the Port Authority Act. In Title 29, it's a relationship that we're very comfortable with. The City Council is allowed to select its own representative to the Inter-Island Ferry Board of Directors. The Council also participates in selecting the at-large member. We get reports regularly from our representative on the IFA board as to what the IFA is doing, and we understand the process to back away from it as well. So this is really a voluntary relationship for the communities to take advantage of. Nobody's going to be forced into anything. It's a relationship that, and as an authority, works well under its existing formats. And I think, based on that experience, the municipal solid waste authority that we're talking about here will provide similar benefits to us. So, in conclusion, Mr. Chairman, I hope the committee will look favorably upon the bill and consider passing it out. And of course, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Bowling, I can recall a few years ago when Sitka closed down their incinerator and then they went to the off-island disposal, and clearly the people in the community thought the scoundrels were in charge because the price went up substantially. And I don't think it was to $200 a ton in Sitka or anywhere close to that, but they still thought that those scoundrels were in charge. So what was the impact on the impression of the residents of Craig when they realized that their local landfill charges were going to go to $200 a ton? And how did you deal with that locally? And what do you expect the financial impact to be for the city of Craig? I assume then that you're not expecting it to be higher than $200 a ton when this is done, but lower.
That's correct. I'm assuming that it will be less than $200 a ton. Well, the impact to us was significant. I mean, you can imagine the ratepayers' feelings when the local rate to collect and dispose of the garbage goes up so fast. It went up from $40 to $200 a ton over just a few years. We've had it at $200 a ton now for about 18 months, and it's been an adjustment for us. And my first reaction, my reaction to those steep climbs and costs is, how can we do it for less money? How can we responsibly handle our garbage, dispose of it for less cost than we have now? And I see this enabling legislation as a way to get that done.
Senator Wagner.
Just curiosity, what's the average charge for a residential garbage collection?
In Craig, the charge for residential garbage collection is $20 per month, which is one can per week per household.
Thank you.
I think the rates in Sitka is higher. I'll have to check that.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. Senator Stevens, any questions?
Trash generators, so.
Do we have any, thank you, Mr. Bowling. Do we have anybody in the audience that would like to testify or speak? Come forward now or forever hold your peace. At least until the end of the meeting.
Late, isn't it?
Kathy, if you could identify yourself and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kathy Wasserman. I'm with the Alaska Municipal League.
And before you start your testimony, I would like to know if you were one of the scoundrels on the assembly in Sitka when they went to off-island disposal.
I was just, no, I was not, sir. I was with another bunch of scoundrels. Senator, Senator Stedman, of which you were one as well. And I was going to bring that up in the my testimony. As you recall, Senator, when you and I were both very young and sat on the Sitka Assembly, we dealt with this issue way back then. And the Alaska Municipal League has been working with Southeast Conference on this issue when possible. And through my 25 years or so with Southeast Conference, I know this has been an issue with much history. We think that this is the smart thing to do because of a couple of buzzwords in there. It's regional, and no matter where you go for grants or help from the legislature, regional always seems to be something that has great favor. It's environmentally smart. It will hopefully keep Southeast Alaska, for sure, of having landfills situated all over Southeast Alaska, and the economy of scale works. We think more communities will join over time rather than less. It's sustainable because more communities will find themselves in the position where their dumps are full, they can no longer afford to open up a new dump, they can't find land, whatever. And some communities, to answer Senator Stevens' question, already have private companies doing their trash collection and disposal, and I've not found a way to argue with private companies yet on billing. I've tried a couple, but it hasn't worked. So we think this is a smart thing to do now, and in the future we think it will probably become a necessity. The authority is open to, or is subject to Open Meetings Act. They're open to an audit. So we hope that that will also answer any questions of people being unhappy with their rates and the way things are collected. But when your garbage collection is already up to $200 a ton, probably it can't get much worse. And with communities being strapped for money, and I won't even add that last section, if they can no longer afford to maintain their dumps, then if authorities are not in the lineup, then privatization will be, and then community members will not have a way to argue with the rates. And not that privatization is a bad thing, but certainly I think communities feel that they can keep the rates down lower than private companies probably can.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yeah, Senator Wagner. I just had one question for Kathy. Is that 75-75? Is that
PPT?
The new PPT?
Yes, I know. I knew you were going to say that. Yeah, we'll be real popular up on the third floor, huh?
So, Kathy, can I ask one more question?
Oh, yeah.
Through the chair.
Yeah.
So, Kathy, if this is such a good idea, why is it taking so long to get to this point? What's the opposition to it?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, you've been in politics a long time. I could probably throw the question back to you in legislative issues.
Well, how long has this been going on? I guess I've been right.
Well, the trash issue of what to do with dumps filling up. Gosh, I was a mayor on Prince of Wales Island in the late 80s, and that was an issue then. I think with the state input and communities, they've just gone through periods where they've tried different things, not knowing what to do. And I don't think in those days, I don't think anyone was shipping, so that certainly was out. And the land scrunch wasn't quite so bad, so people were looking into opening new dumps, but then that's when there started to be more permitting involved, cleanup bonding involved. Communities found they couldn't continue to keep that up. And if Southeast's population were growing as quickly as its trash, maybe we would have, you know, been able to figure something out more quickly. But, you know, we live in a more trash-filled world.
If I could add a little bit to that, I think when some of the communities had incinerators and or mm-hmm. open landfills, and as those incinerators aged, they had a huge regulation changes. So to replace the incinerator, there was huge capital costs, and it was actually less expensive to off-island disposal the waste than to build new incinerators, because the communities of Ketchikan, Sitka, and Petersburg, Wrangell just don't have the generation capability to run an incinerator to get an efficiency of scale. They'd run out of garbage, and their core temperatures would get too cold. So they went through the political battle of off-island disposal, and now that there's most of Southeast Alaska, the populated areas, except for Juneau, is on off-island, it's evolving into the next phase, and how they deal with their long-term contracts, like I mentioned earlier, is another issue.
Plus, also, Senator, through the chair, I believe we were a little more lax in the plumes of smoke that we breathed in then than we are now, and so permitting has become a larger issue than it was.
We had in Sitka, we had the incinerator almost downtown.
Yeah, it almost was downtown, and no one really complained back then. But then, as soon as Senator Stedman was elected to the assembly, they all began to complain.
Is there a connection here?
Yes, and I would be glad to tell you that connection.
Yeah. Any other questions for her? Okay. Thank you. Anybody else from the audience would like to come forward if they have anything to say or testimony? Anybody else online? Called in. Any other comments from the... I'd like to go ahead and close the public hearing portion.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
So am I right in understanding that this is entirely, this is in no way mandatory? The communities don't have to join, and is there, if they do join, is there a facility, is there a way for them to withdraw if they should find they want to at a later date?
Absolutely. Yes,
but
to all.
But they do have to pay, I assume they have to pay some obligation, the bonds and the... Yeah.
If they have made a commitment when they joined, and whatever that could be, because we don't know now, because the authority will decide on those things and draw up their bylaws and things like that. But if they're in it and have made a commitment and they want out, they can get out, but they can't get out of that commitment if it's a whatever that commitment was. But once that's paid off, you know, I mean, they could still be out of it, but they still are held to that commitment.
Senator Wagner.
And just put it on the record, we're at about $6.9 billion in PERS TERS, and just for the record, as a member of this committee, that should be the way this goes, and there should never be any liability assumed by the state of Alaska on an organization such as this.
And that's in the bill also.
Kind of the way we got here in the first place on PERS TERS for municipalities.
Right. And that is in the bill. It says that the state of Alaska...
Bridge up in
he's not being held responsible.
I don't want that bridge either.
Thank you.
Yes, Senator Wagner.
I'd move House Bill 392 from committee with the individual recommendations.
Yeah. And attach zero physical notes.
Excuse me? With attached fiscal notes.
Yeah. And let the record show that we've got 3-0 fiscal notes, and the Finance Committee, I'm sure, will review the status of that potential obligation coming back to the state. Do we have an objection? Okay. Thank you. We'll have a brief at ease.
Thank you. Ready? Well, we'll go off the record here. Wait for my... we're going to have a public hearing, a presentation, a public hearing on HB 334, property tax exemption for dilapidated or deteriorated properties. Representative Ramos has come down from... on high to give us a presentation. You could, I assume you decline from further floors up, or
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm appropriately nervous to be before you for the first time, and I appreciate your latitude. We're busy down at House Resources working on a bill in your district, Mr. Chairman.
We may have to go to recess. I might have to get down there. But go ahead.
Yes, sir. House Bill 334 is a bill that deals with dilapidated buildings, a lot like the McKay building that's in Anchorage. We have an eyesore. It's a holdover from the 1950s in Fairbanks called the Polaris building. And The owner went bankrupt probably a decade ago. The building is now got broken pipes, plywood over windows. It's right across the street from the brand new Rabinowitz State Courthouse that was built 2 years ago. It's been in the news in Fairbanks just this week. While it's a proposed development by Mark Marlowe, who is a builder who has had some experience in converting these dilapidated buildings. And what he is working with the local community officials in Fairbanks, and he is already through the borough and is now attempting through the city of Fairbanks to get property tax concessions. And it appears that in the state statute that some of these property tax exemptions, in the same way that we have to consider here whether one legislature can bind over another legislature, it appears that there is some question as to whether an existing city council can bind the future city council, if you will. I think that's the best way to try and explain it. And so House Bill 334 offers some clarification to that point. And we have found some interest from across the state with older buildings that are eyesores. In this case, the city would have to would have the burden, several million dollars, to tear down this structure, and the city can't afford to do it. And a developer without any certainty with regard to property tax exemptions is reluctant to step forward and do it. So House Bill 334 really is just a housekeeping bill, and to some degree, in that it clarifies that an exemption, once it's agreed to between the party and the local governing body, that it stays that way for the duration of the project, but still allows for local control and great latitude for the local municipalities to make a deal. But once the deal is made, the deal sticks until the clock expires, or until both groups are have reached terms. And the only exception to that is a beneficial occupancy exception, and that is again something that is between a potential developer and the local municipality. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Rammers. I got a couple questions, and then we'll put up the deferral on that is granted for an older, rundown structure. If it was sold, could you please explain to me what would happen then?
Thank you.
And then, or sold, or if title was transferred, and then the lien mechanism that would be in place to collect it if in such time it's not sold.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
It's line 12, page 1. My understanding of the bill, it just deferred, and then at such time as the property sold, all the taxes that were deferred are then due to the municipality?
I'm just trying to recollect this. When it went through, we made some changes in house finance. I believe that you're correct that there are some substantial occupancy issues that arose in the event that somebody developed the building. It achieved some degree of substantial occupancy, and they did not sell the property. What would happen to the tax deferral? We were concerned about creating a loophole that would give an unfair advantage to a developer who then became a landlord that did not participate in the sale of a building. Is that an answer to your question, Mr. Chairman?
I think so.
Or am I missing the point?
And then on page 4, or excuse me, page 2, line 4, that talks about one exemption, one deferral. So I take that as that's stacking language. So, the concern here is an unfunded mandate pushed back to the municipalities, type of an issue that we face with on other property tax deferral items, and maybe you could explain how that works.
Mr. Chairman, I will be happy to, but I think that's existing statute and wasn't really part of what we were trying to address. I think primarily we were just trying to provide certainty and clarification for the statute as it does exist. If you feel that we're exacerbating a problem, then I'd be delighted to delve into it. But you're talking about only one exemption, only one deferral may be granted the same property under this subsection. And you're concerned that this will create a...
No, I guess just I just wanted a clarification that this, that there can't be multiple stacking issues here.
I believe that you're correct.
We have any questions? Senator Kukesh.
Is this the same statute that the McKay building was refurbished in Anchorage, or did they do it under the city ordinance?
Senator, Jim Pound tells me that it is a combination of those things. What has been lacking, I think, is just this clarification.
Okay.
For the benefit of the developer, it's really similar to some of the issues that we're grappling with in both bodies, which is providing some certainty for a developer to be able to go forward and know that if they've secured a tax exemption, that they can maintain that through the life of their project and the life of their exemption, even if there is a change in the elected officials for the local governing body. And I believe that really is the extent of 334, and that we weren't looking to try and rewrite statute, but simply to clarify what's on the books, and with the hope of that the clarification will give steadier footing to a potential developer to take an eyesore in whoever's community that there is and be able to go forward and rehabilitate it and do a little regentrification to our communities.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Ramos, if this were to be passed, would it still have to be approved by the municipality? Is this in no way any mandatory requirement of the municipality that they still have every choice to say yes or no?
Yes, Senator Stevens, that's correct.
Any other questions? Do we have anybody on the off-net call-ins? And do we have any testimony from participants in the audience? And then maybe we could address for a little bit what happens to the developer if they abandon the property. Is there any abandonment issues that we need to deal with?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not familiar with anything in this bill that addresses that particular issue. Certainly the McKay building has not been a remarkable story in as told with they've gone with any due speed in completing that building. I think they've been working on that for nearly a decade. I don't know that House Bill 334 is meant to address a default by a particular developer. I assume that both parties would have their capital and their time at risk, and if they got halfway into a project and the developer walked away, they would lose their capital investment, and whatever abatement of taxes had been had, the municipality would lose those going forward. And I don't know that that's any more specifically addressed in this bill.
Senator Wagner.
No, I was just going to say there are very few pieces of property similar to the McKay property and the one you mentioned in Fairbanks, and so I think this is going to be a very very few pieces of property are going to come under this, but I can see the need for it. I think it's a good bill. It helps the communities.
Through the chair, Senator Wagner, one of the unsolicited remarks that we got was from the head of the Alaska Tourism Industry Association, who saw this as a potential vehicle for communities that are scattered across the state that have some value as a tourism property that may be in disrepair and would benefit from something like this. It was really the only private sector entity that contacted us. And I'm always reluctant were reluctant to do a bill that benefits a single single party, and I went out of my way to try not to meet this fellow, Mr. Marlowe, and I bumped into him at a social event. But the fact is that when I was a boy, the Tiki Cove restaurant was on top of this building, and it was, you know, the best restaurant in Fairbanks, and it was an operating hotel, 140-room hotel, for many, many years. And you know, time is good to all of us, but generally cruel to real estate. And this is an old cinder block asbestos building, and it went defunct about a decade ago, I believe. And it's always of interest to me in our evening newscast. They show a panoramic view of the city to capture the Rabinowitz Courthouse, which is a brand new state-funded project. And right next to it, because there's a cell phone tower and a satellite dish, it looks like this is a functioning, attractive building in our community. But in fact, it's just a tremendous eyesore, and the city can't afford to remove it. So we think this any bill, any push that the state can give to help regentrify the downtown in one of Alaska's urban centers or rural center is a good public policy, as far as I'm concerned, for the state of Alaska.
Okay. Do we have any other comments?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we move out CS for House Bill number 334 Finance /G with the attached zero fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Any objection? Okay, with that, meeting adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman.